Hi, everybody. Bob Claster here, and I'm your host for Funny Stuff, half an hour of comedy that airs every Friday night here on KCRW. And tonight being Friday night, this is no exception. The one thing that is exceptional about tonight is that a while back I received a letter from a listener, musician, and record collector Brad Kay, who told me that he has an outstanding collection of old 78s comedy records, some of the very earliest comedy records ever made, going back as early as 1902, and that he'd like to share them with us here at the Funny Stuff audience. And so indeed that has transpired, and Brad is here today to play some of his old 78 comedy records. And as I say, these are some of the very first comedy records ever made. One little caveat up front, some of these records are very racist in content and are presented here only as historical documents, and certainly imply no feelings on either of our parts, I'm sure, and also on the part of the station. I'm sure I can say that with no fear of being contradicted. But they are fascinating in terms of documents, because even though they are phonograph records, they're still only about 30 or 40 years after slavery. And so there's a lot of things that are very interesting about them, and in addition to a lot of things that are very funny about them. Hello, Brad.
Hello, Bob.
And before we get started, let me thank you for contacting me and sending me this tape, which we'll be listening to today.
It's a pleasure.
What's that? What about this first one we're listening to? Arthur Collins.
Arthur Collins. This is called Helen Gone. It's a popular song from 1902, the sort of thing that that people would sing along with in the chorus. Arthur Collins was a popular record baritone. I don't know if he had much of a career outside of the studio, which goes for most of what we'll be hearing tonight. And he made hundreds and hundreds of records, and this is one typical such record, a very early record. It's actually announced.
Helen Gone, sung by Arthur Collins.
I had a sweetheart, her last name was Gone, and I was gone on her. Her first name was Helen, and fair as the dawn, in my heart she soon made a stir. She lived in the country, did this pretty doll, 20 miles distant from our city hall. And I was so smitten, each night I would call on Helen Gone. When I first met her, sweet flowers I sent to Helen Gone. Once I had money, but that quickly went to Helen Gone. I wore out my shoes just to tramp to and fro. From my house to hers was a long walk, you know. But still like a chump, every night I would go to Helen Gone. Till this sweet maiden one day I was wed, I was proud as proud could be. When we were married, her mama, she said that she would live with me. Last summer, my wife to the seashore did flip. Her mother remained, I almost had a fit. She fought with me until I told her to get to Helen Gone. Borrowed a horse just to drive out one day to Helen Gone. The horse broke the traces and he ran away to Helen Gone. But when I returned to the owner, you see, he was as mad, just as mad as could be. He turned me around first and then he kicked me to Helen Gone. Borrowed a horse just to drive out one day to Helen Gone. The horse broke the traces and he ran away to Helen Gone. But when I returned to the owner, you see, he was as mad, just as mad as could be. He turned me around first and then he kicked me to Helen Gone.
Well, long last winter, a fella come down to Pumpkin Center and said he was a walking delegate for a labor union. He said everything had to be union now to be successful, and quoted the United States as an example. Well, we held a lot of meeting down to the schoolhouse and had a lot of speaking on the subject. Jim Lawson was chairman. Jim said he used to be a union man. He worked for the Union Pacific. Well, they organized a lot of unions and put in there everybody joined them but me. I thought I'd wait a spell and see how it worked. Mother said I'd joined every fool thing what come along anyhow. Well, we got more unions now than you can shake a stick at. Well, when it comes springtime, I had to hire a lot of help to work on the farm, and gosh, I had more trouble than a Democrat at a Republican rally. I set one feller to plowing, and he plowed a furrow across the field and stopped, and I went out and asked him why he didn't turn around and plow back, and he said, want his job, turn the horse around. That was a job of the horse turner union, and I had to hire another fella to turn the horse around. Well, when it come dinner time, I rung the bell and they didn't come in. I went out and asked them why they didn't unhitch and come to dinner, and they said, want their job to unhitch the horse. That was a job of the horse unhitcher union. Well, then we got into the barn and wouldn't none of them feed him. Said that was a job of the feeder union, and the girls what milked the cows, they wouldn't strain the milk. Said that was a job of the strainer union, and they wouldn't skim the milk. Said that was a job of the skimmer union, and they wouldn't churn it. Said was a job for the churners union. Well, I calculated if I was going to get anything done, I'd have to do it myself. Well, I went out to take in some hay, what the haymaker union had left after they worked what they called 8 hours, and that walking delegate come along, told me I couldn't take in that hay. I wasn't a member of the union, and I asked him how long would it take to become a member. He said 2 weeks. Well, I told him it looked like rain, and I was afraid my hay would spile, and I couldn't wait. Well, I started to load it up, and they all went on a strike and called me a scab and wouldn't let me work on my own farm. Well, I've got a rifle and a double-barreled shotgun and 2 bulldogs now. Don't none of them belong to the union. And that walking delegate comes around my way again, by gosh, he's going to be a running delegate.
Okay, that was from 1906, and that was Cal Stewart with Uncle Josh and the labor unions. I guess in 1906, labor unions were still a fairly outrageous concept.
Yes, they were not taken seriously until the 30s, really. But as you can see, it was a subject of fun in those days. Uncle Josh was a Rube character that I believe Cal Stewart invented, and was a popular stereotype. There were other comedians who did that sort of a Yankee humor, but Cal Stewart was the main one.
Speaking,
and he made hundreds of these records. Uncle Josh at the roller skating rink. Uncle Josh gets an automobile. Uncle Josh, you know, and it was always the rustic Rube who has these perilous encounters with modern, newfangled ideas and gadgets, of which one was, of course, labor unions.
Speaking of stereotypes, we now move to Nat M. Wills from 1908 with No News or What Killed the Dog. What can you tell me about this?
Ah, yes. Well, this is the first record of the example of the topper on top of a topper type of comedy that Don Adams made so famous later with his Maxwell Smart routines. Would you believe this?
Right,
and
right.
Would you believe more of this? And this is what it all comes back to, is this story of the man and his servant at the railroad station.
A wealthy man was ordered by his physician to go away to the mountains for a rest. He went home, told his members of his family of what the doctor had said. He says, while I'm away, I don't wish to be annoyed by letters or telegrams. In fact, I don't want to receive any news of any kind. So he went away, was gone about 6 weeks. returned to the city very much improved in health and very anxious for some news from home. Got off of the train at the depot, was met by his colored servant, and the following conversation ensued. He said, "Well, Henry, how is everything at home? Is there any news?" "There's no, sir. There ain't no news, sir. Everything is just about the same as when you all went away. Nothing happened?" "No, sir. There ain't nothing happened. There ain't no news." "Well," he says, "you know, I'm just dying for some word from home now. You can tell me any little thing, no matter how trifling." "No, sir. There ain't no news. There ain't nothing to tell you, sir. Except, there's just one little thing. Since you've been away, your dog died." "Oh," he says, "my dog died, eh? Well, that's too bad. What killed the dog?" "Well, sir, the dog eats some burnt horse flesh. And that's what killed the dog. He eats burnt horse flesh. Where did he get burnt horse flesh to eat?" "Well, sir, you know your barn burned down. And after the fire had cooled off, the dog went and ate some of the burnt horse flesh, and that's what killed the dog." "Oh," he says, "my barn burned down, eh?" "Oh, yes, sir. Yes, indeed, the barn, that's all burned down." "Well," says, "how did the barn catch fire?" "Well, see, you see, the spark from the house flew over, caught onto the barn, burned the barn down, burned up all the cows and the horses, and after the fire had cooled off, the dog went and ate some of the burnt horse flesh, and that's what killed the dog." "Oh," he says, "then my house burned down too, eh?" "Oh, yes, sir. Yes, indeed, the house, that's completely destroyed." He says, "Well, how did the house catch fire?" "Well, sir, they had some candles burning in the house, and one of the candles caught onto the curtains, and the curtains caught onto the roof, and the spark flew over and caught onto the barn and burned the barn down, burned up all the cows and the horses, and after the fire had cooled off, the dog went and ate some of the burnt horse flesh, and that's what killed the dog." He says, "They had candles burning in the house where I have gas and electricity. I never knew there was a candle in the place." "Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. They had the candles there. They had the candles burning all around the coffin." "The coffin? Who's dead?" "Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. That's another little thing I forgot to tell you about. Since you've been away, your mother-in-law died." "Oh, my mother-in-law died, eh?" "Yes, sir. Yes, sir. She's dead, all right. You needn't worry about that." "Well," it says, "what killed my mother-in-law?" "Well, sir, I don't know exactly what killed her, sir. But around the neighborhood, they say it was from the shock of your wife running away with the chauffeur. But outside of that, sir, why, there ain't no news."
So that was Nat Wills with "No News or What Killed the Dog." We have another side of Nat Wills now, which is a little less laudatory, I'd
say. Before we get to that, I should mention that James Thurber wrote that he and his brothers used to listen to that record, this one we just heard, over and over and over again until they could all repeat the speech. And it got to the point where the record developed a skip, and he remembers that it would just skip and skip and go, "Eat some burnt horse flesh, eat some burnt horse flesh, eat some..." And formed a memorable part of it. So if you ever read James Thurber, you can find the story.
Okay, now this is called "A Negro Story."
Yes, this is one of two Negro stories that was on a record. This was the first of the two.
Well, let's listen to it, and we'll pass judgment on it after we hear it.
Yes.
At one of the principal hotels in one of the larger cities in Canada, they employ colored waiters. And they are a very important and pompous lot of gentlemen. Just before it's time for the dining room to open for a meal, they stand around, one at each table, dressed in evening dress clothes and immaculate white shirts. That is, the front of them is white. Stopping in this hotel at the time I speak of was a typical southerner, a Georgia planter, man with a lot of money. He walked into the dining room one evening about 5 minutes before mealtime, pushed open the door, walked right in, called over the principal waiter, big, tall darky, about 6'2". Called him over and he said, "Look here." Says, "I want to find out who's the head nigger here." This big fella says, "Nigger?" Says, "You mistaken, sir." Said, "Ain't no niggers here." "Say, you up here in Canada now under the English flag. You ain't down south. Say, you see all them men standing around by them tables? Well, them is all colored gentlemen. No niggers. Besides, you in the dining room too early anyhow. Dinner ain't ready yet. When it's ready, I'll call you." This man went down his pocket and pulled out a big roll of money. Took off a $20 note. He said, "Well, I'm going to be here a week. And I wanted to find out who the head nigger was, because I want to give him the $20 to take care of me while I'm here. This big fella says, I'm the head nigger, boss. Yes, sir. I'm the head nigger. And if you don't believe me, you ask any of them niggers stand around there and they'll tell you I am.
That's amazing. That truly is amazing.
Isn't it?
Now tell me, one gets the impression from listening to some of these things, plus some of the things we don't have time to play tonight, that the black people were a national obsession at the time. That they were, it definitely seems to be the main subject of humor.
In
at least the relationship between white people and these black people that one seems to think they really don't quite know how to deal with or what to make of.
It's important to remember that in those days there was absolutely no integration. White people and black people simply did not mix on a social or even business level, except as employer and servants. And so naturally, all the stereotypes that emerged came from this kind of
isolation
and ignorance. I don't know what more to say. It's a phenomenon of that time.
Well, the whites fairly well monopolized the record business at the time, right? These were records made by white people for white people.
Definitely, except that there were a few blacks who did make records at that time. However, there was no black record industry until the 20s, and we're still listening. This record we just heard was maybe 1912.
You've got 1910 written here.
1910, okay.
Yeah. Well, speaking of blacks that did make records, we have the wonderful Burt Williams here. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Burt Williams?
Well, Burt Williams was born in the West Indies, and he came to America at an early age. He was born in 1874. And by the turn of the century, he had attained top status in American vaudeville, was playing the palace, and by 1910 or 1912, I believe he had found his way to the Ziegfeld Follies, making himself the top blackface comedian. And I use that term because in those days, even if you were black, you had to dress up in blackface. But Burt Williams, I wonder, I'm not quite clear about this. I think U.B. Blake was, and Cecil and Blake were the first blacks to appear in vaudeville without makeup. But Burt Williams did appear in makeup. But he was subversive in a way, because he was able to take the racist stereotypes, such as we've heard, and manipulate them so that people could see the humanity in them and read between the lines, so to speak. And his comic timing and his genius.
Well, he's still talked about as a legendary entertainer so many years after his death.
Yes. Well, so, a deserved legend. He was one of the true geniuses of comedy. And I think you should devote a whole show to him.
Well, let's hear You'll Never Need a Doctor No More.
I suppose you all heard of Dr. Sojo Bones, a very bitter enemy to Deacon Jones. Tuesday evening, Deacon Jones took sick, and seems he had to send for Dr. Sojo quick. On the deacon's face there was a distressful frown. Indigestion had wore him down. The doctor says, "Oh, it's you I have to kill. Well, here's what I'll prescribe to fix you show. Some green cucumbers, some stewed tripe rare, roast pork, cantaloupe, and bevo beer. Half a dozen crabs, two lobsters broiled. Bananas and fish, but let the fish be spoiled. Cold storage chicken and hot corn bread. Now, I think that'll be a scientific show. And if you eat everything, brother, that I'm telling you to eat, you'll never need a doctor no more. Matilda Jenkins whispered this to Deacon Jones. Said she, you a fool to send for Dr. Bones. Don't you know the doctor's sore on you? Sure. He loved that widow Brown. You was kind of liking her, too. Don't you remember how peculiar it was how her husband died? Why, the way that man suffered, the neighbors all cried. His chances for life was so slim. And here's what Dr. Bones prescribed for him. A watermelon and peach ice cream. Sour milk, apple sauce, and spinach green. Pudding, prunes and rice, a half-cooked shad. Dozen eggs and had the eggs bad. Some corned beef and cabbage, some lima beans. Oh my, it was an awful cure. Indeed it was. And don't you know Brother Brown went and ate everything he's told to eat? You see the reason he don't need no doctor no more?
And also from the Ziegfeld Follies, we've got Will Rogers and Fanny Bryce.
You know, these talking machines are great things. When you come to a theater or movies to see some of us and don't like our act, you just kind of out of courtesy you have to stick and see it through. But on one of these, if you don't like us, you just stop the machine, take the record off, and accidentally drop it on the floor. Then the only annoyance we cause you is sweeping up. Now, folks, all I know is just what little news I read every day in the papers. I see where another wife out on Long Island near New York just shot her husband. Season opened a month earlier this year. Prohibition caused all this. There's just as many husbands shot at in the old days, but women were missing them. Prohibition's improved their marksmanship 90%. Never a day passes in New York without some innocent bystander being shot. You just stand around this town long enough and be innocent and somebody's going to shoot you. One day there was 4 shots. That's the best shooting ever done in this town. It's hard to find 4 innocent people in New York, even if you don't stop to shoot them. That's why a policeman never has to aim here. He just shoots up the street anywhere. No matter who he hits, it's the right one. Robberies. Did you ever read about so many robbers? I see where some of our cities and towns are talking about being more strict with these robbers. When they catch them from now on, they're going to publish their name. They've been having every kind of a week here in New York. Smile week, apple week, one call, don't get hurt week. Tax cab drivers couldn't hardly wait till the following Monday to run over you. Everybody's talking about what's the matter with this country and what the country needs. What this country needs worse than anything else is a place to park your car. What our big cities need is another orange in these orange aid stands. See where a New York society woman is suing her ex-husband again, claims she can't properly support that child on $50,000 a year alimony. Somebody's been feeding that young one meat. Lots of people wondered why we left our soldiers in Germany so long. That's so they could get the mail sent to them during war. We had to leave them over there. 2 of them hadn't married yet. I'm off Ireland for home rule from now on. I read an Irish paper the other day and it says liquor is 18 cents a quart. Can you imagine a nation wanting more freedom than that? See where the Ku Klux is coming into New York? Yes, they're here. I'm no fool. You ain't gonna get me telling no jokes about them.
That's not from the 20s. That's our theme, which means that we have basically and totally run out of time. Well, Brad, I want to thank you for bringing this stuff down here.
It's been a great pleasure, Bob. I'm happy to be on your show.
And there is much more of this stuff, I assume?
Oh, yes. Scads.
So if
piles.
If you enjoyed this and would like to hear more of the same or more of similar ilk, drop us a line. It's Bob Claster, Funny Stuff. KCRW, 1900 Pico Boulevard, Santa Monica, California, 90405. And that's going to have to do it. Next week's show, I am unprepared, and I don't remember what it's going to be. But I quickly look here in the program guide and tell you that next week's show is going to be Steve Allen and Company, featuring Bill Dana, Don Knotts, and Louis Nye, all of his repertory players. I did that fairly quickly. You never would have known, right? So I hope you can join me for that next week, and that's about it. So until then, this is your host, Bob Claster, thanking Brad for joining me and thanking all of you for listening, and reminding you to always keep that sense of humor well exercised, because you never know when you're going to need it. Good night, everybody.